You know, I read a story about a man named Jaime Jaramillo. And Jaime was, this is back in the 1970s. He was walking down a street in Bogota in Colombia. And he saw a little girl turn the corner and go down a manhole into the sewer. And he wondered, why is this little girl going down into the sewer? He went home and he got a wetsuit and went down in the manhole and he saw 90 children living below the streets in a sewer in Bogota, Colombia. See, what was going on at the time was there was a civil war in Colombia and many, many children were orphaned. These children ended up at the bottom of the pile in society. They were threatened by street gangs, threatened by violence, and so they used to hide where they could. And these children made their way down into the sewer. Well, street gangs treated them like nothing. One street gang member said that these sewer kids were no better than lice. They needed to be exterminated. Papa Jaime didn't feel that way. He was a very wealthy man, and he decided to take his fortune and spend it by opening a huge orphanage for children. And what he did was he invited kids from all over the city to live there who didn't have family, to give them an education, to give them food, to give them love. Papa Jaime eventually rescued thousands and thousands of children across Colombia. Now, why did Papa Jaime give his fortune for these street kids that many people considered no better than sewer rats? Where did he get the idea from? Where did he get the values from that every child was worth protecting, every child was worth saving, no matter how poor, no matter how unloved, no matter how neglected, that every child had worth? Here's what we read in the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. The Bible is a book about light. It's bookended, in fact, by light. The first creative act of God, if you go back to the beginning of the Bible, to the book of Genesis, the very first thing that God does was he spoke it and there was light. And if you go to the very end of the Bible, to the last book, the book of Revelation, what we read in the last chapter of Revelation is that God is going to banish all darkness. Here's what we read in Revelation 22, verse 5. There will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light. In between the beginning of creation and the end of time, in the middle of history, light comes as God enters the world at Christmas. Have you ever wondered why the symbol of Christmas is lights? Why people just string lights around their homes and you see lights at shopping malls? Most people don't know why they do that. They just do it. But why is light so associated with Christmas? Well, those of you who know your Bibles, if you read in the Gospels, light is associated with the coming of God into the world at Christmas. We read about the shepherds who are out in the field and light suddenly bursts in the sky as the glory of God shines around the angels. And these magi were guided from the east to the home where Jesus was by a star that lit up the sky. The prophet Isaiah prophesies the coming of Messiah Jesus into the world this way. He says, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. When the old man Simeon sees the baby Jesus for the first time in the temple, he says that God has given a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." A lot of people wonder, you know, what does it mean to become a Christian? Listen, this Christmas Eve, you need to understand that no one is born a Christian. No one. You can be born white or black or Latino or Asian. You can be born American or Nigerian or Colombian. You can be born of very many different ethnicities, but no one in the world is born a Christian. The way you become a Christian is you make a decision to receive Jesus into your life. A lot of people say, well, how do I become a Christian? What does it mean to become a Christian? The Apostle Peter, one of Jesus' closest followers and friends, said that being a Christian is being called out of darkness into God's wonderful light. Christianity is all about a movement from darkness to light. Well, the world in which Jesus was born was a very dark place indeed. It was a really dark place. There's a great YouTube video that I'd love to call your attention to. It's only 5 minutes long. It's a conversation between Tom Holland, who's one of England's most popular historians and writers. And Tom Holland is having a conversation with N.T. Wright, who's one of the world's foremost New Testament scholars. And the video was called, it's Tom Holland's story, and it's called Why I Changed My Mind About Christianity. Why I Changed My Mind About Christianity. And what Tom Holland does, very briefly, is he says that most of his growing up, he assumed, because of his schooling, that the things that mattered most to him, the things that he valued the most in life, came from the great classical civilizations of ancient Rome and ancient Greece. But as he studied ancient history and began writing ancient history, or writing about ancient history, he found that the ancient world was incredibly dark. For example, Julius Caesar, who lived just a few decades before Jesus. Julius Caesar marched into ancient France, a place that back then was called Gaul. He marched into ancient France with the Roman army, and he slaughtered over 1 million Gauls. He enslaved 1 million more. But instead of being ashamed about slaughtering so many people, Caesar celebrated it. He wrote his annals about the Gallic Wars, and he was cheered in the streets of Rome as the, you know, the one who conquered ancient Gaul. The ancient world was a very dark place. The poor and the weak had no place in Rome or Greece. None. The entire economy was based upon slavery. The sexual economy was based upon the right of any free Roman man to have sex with any other person any way they chose. It was a terribly cruel and dark place. So where did we ever get the idea that children ought to be protected? If you think children ought to be loved, that children ought to be protected, that Papa Jaime did the right thing by rescuing kids from a sewer, where do you get that idea from? If you believe that women should have the same rights and opportunities and privileges as men, where did you get that idea from? Where do you get the idea that every human being ought to have certain rights? If you believe that the sick ought to be visited, or that they should have a right to go to the hospital or get medical treatment, where did you get that idea from? As I said, the world into which Jesus was born was a very dark place. You know, in ancient Rome, fathers had the absolute right to determine who in their family was going to live and who was going to die. A child didn't have the right to live simply because the child was born. In fact, families would wait. Fathers would wait 8 or 9 days to determine whether they were going to welcome that child into the family or not. If the child had a deformity, if the child had a disability, very often fathers would put their child out in the street to die of exposure or to kill them some other way. Children could be legally abused by their fathers. Children could be sold into slavery by their fathers. It was Jesus who gave children worth. It was Jesus who taught us that children were of infinite worth. Jesus made children the heroes of some of his stories. Jesus welcomed children to himself. And Jesus said, and he taught his followers this lesson, if anyone abuses a child, it would be better for that person to tie a rock around their neck and jump off a bridge than to face what God is going to deal with to them on the day of judgment. But it wasn't just what Jesus said. It was the way God came into the world that tells us of the worth of children. I read a story some years ago about a farming community in Kansas, and a tornado had torn through this town and very nearly destroyed a farm family's house. There was a little girl that, you know, was living in the house, and this little girl, she became afraid of storms, especially thunderstorms. Well, one night there was a terrible thunderstorm, and the windows of the house began to shake, and the little girl was frightened, and she didn't want to go upstairs to bed by herself. Her daddy walked her up the stairs, put her in bed. He came back downstairs, and he heard his little girl crying from up in her bedroom, so he walked up the stairs, and he said, "Honey, you don't need to be afraid. You don't need to be scared. You know, the storm's not going to hurt us. Stop crying. Go to bed." And the little girl looked at her daddy, and between her sniffles, she said, "Well, that's easy for you to say because you don't know what it's like to be little." You know, the God we worship at Christmas, the God that we sing about in our Christmas carols, the God that we sing to in our Christmas carols, that God doesn't just come alongside of our bed and say, "There, there, don't be afraid. Everything is going to be okay." God doesn't just stand near us and tell us that we don't need to be frightened about the future, about whatever we're facing right now. We can have peace. That God knows what it's like to be little. He came into the world as a newborn baby. The reason why Christians believe that every baby's life has worth and every child's life has worth, every teenager's life has worth, every adult's life has worth, is because God came into the world as a baby. And that's why Christians were the first in world history to start children's protection agencies. We have child protection agencies all over the world right now. Most people don't know that those agencies were first started, the first ones in world history were started by Christians. The first orphanages were started by Christians. And today, all over the world, there are Christian orphanages that welcome every child from every background. Child labor laws, the first child labor laws that protected children from going down in mines and from being, you know, maimed and killed in factory accidents and working, laboring all day on the farm. Child labor laws were first proposed by Christians. The reason is because they follow a Savior who gave birth to children. But as I said, the world that Jesus was born into was a very dark place. Do you believe that women ought to have the same rights, the same privileges, the same opportunities as men? Do you believe that? Amen. Some of you men who are sitting next to your wives and might be mumbling something else, you might want to consider where you're planning to sleep this Christmas Eve. In the garage or in your own bed if you want to change your answer. But where did you get the idea, as almost all of us and virtually everyone, you know, in America believes that women ought to have the same rights and same opportunities, the same privileges as men? Where did we get that idea from? You know, in the ancient world, women got almost no education. Women could be married off as below age 13. In fact, many of them were. Women could be divorced from their husbands simply by their husbands ordering them out of the house. And Roman families and Greek families didn't want baby girls. You know, when you think about it, God has arranged the world so that there's roughly an equal number of baby boys born and baby girls born. Have you ever thought about that? You know, the way it shakes down, there's roughly the same number of baby boys and baby girls. What we don't find in typical populations is wildly more baby boys born than baby girls. More baby girls born than baby boys, and roughly the same numbers. But if you look at the records of ancient Greek cities and ancient Roman cities, there were way more men than there were women. Why? Because most ancient Greek families and most ancient Roman families didn't want more than one daughter. If they had a second daughter, they would put that daughter to death. Now listen. If you're a woman here or you're a girl here and you have an older sister, you should understand that if you grew up in ancient Rome or ancient Greece, you probably would not have seen your first birthday. The early church taught people to not put their daughters to death. Before that, they did. The church came along and said no. The early church raised the marriage age for girls so that girls wouldn't be married before age 13. The early church taught that husbands could not divorce their wives simply by pushing them out of the house. And where did they get these ideas from? They got them from Jesus. It was Jesus who taught men and women that, you know, we're not going to have a sexual double standard. In the ancient world, men could have sex any way, anytime they wanted, but women were required to be virgins on their wedding day and faithful their whole lives. Jesus said, no. Men and women should be abstinent before marriage and utterly faithful in marriage. And Jesus taught that men simply couldn't put their wives away. Jesus taught the great worth of women. Unlike virtually every other ancient teacher, Jesus had students who were women. Some of his closest disciples were women. And his most faithful disciples were women. The last people at the cross were women. And Jesus gave the honor and privilege of first preaching the resurrection, that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead. He gave that privilege to women. And so if you think that women ought to have the same rights as men, that idea can be traced back to Jesus. Do you think the sick ought to be visited? If somebody is sick, do you think that you ought to take care of them or give them medical treatment, or should you just leave them to fend for themselves? Listen. In ancient Rome, there was an epidemic. And what non-Christians did was they left family members to fend for themselves, and many of those family members died. It was Christians who cared for their own family and for the left-behind family members of non-Christians. They nursed these folks back to health. The first hospitals in the world were started by Christians. The reason was because Jesus taught his followers to care for the sick. The world that Jesus was born in was a very dark place. And you know, the world this Christmas Eve is still in many ways a very dark place. The life expectancy of Americans is actually going down for the fourth year running. And this is a really unusual thing in American history. For virtually all the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century, life expectancy went up and up and up as the average age of people dying in America just kept climbing. But the last 4 years, for the first time, it's curved down because of the number of deaths from overdoses. The birth rate in the United States is going down, and families are coming apart. And it's becoming more and more unusual for children to be raised by both their father and their mother, who stays together through their whole marriage. Marriages are dissolving, and communities are falling apart. It's not atypical anymore for us to not know our neighbors two doors down or three or four doors down, not even to know their names. People are moving from job to job and church to church, and it's becoming unusual for folks to have lifelong colleagues at work. We feel more disconnected from our jobs. People are more dissatisfied with their work. Fewer and fewer of us have friends over the course of a lifetime as people move from city to city, and people feel rootless. They feel like they're just kind of floating. There's a thread that runs through American society. It's a thread of loneliness, a thread of isolation, of feeling disconnected from each other. We don't feel connected in community or civic associations anymore. We're not connected, many of us, in churches anymore. And so you know what people are looking to give a larger sense of meaning to life, a larger sense of hope? You know what more Americans are looking to? We're looking to politics. We think politics are going to heal the soul of America. You talk about America being divided this Christmas Eve. Half of us think the other half is absolutely crazy. They've done surveys, and people more and more don't just think that people who are in the opposite party are wrongheaded or misguided. People think those folks are absolutely evil. We live with alternative facts. Folks believe that this other group is ruining the country. I want you to hear this Christmas Eve. That into this dark world, the Republican Party is not going to bring light. And neither will the Democratic Party or the Libertarian Party or the Green Party. There's only one source of light in this world, and his name is Jesus Christ. And he's the only one who's going to heal the soul of America. Politics will never do it. And no politician will either. You know, we need light. And light only comes through Jesus Christ. Now here's the deal. A lot of people think that to place your faith in Jesus is to have a leap into the dark. But faith is not a leap into the dark. Faith is a step into the light. Faith is a step into the light based upon reasons, based upon evidences. Faith is not leaping off a cliff into a dark abyss. Faith is a step into the light based upon reasons, based upon evidences. I would not be a follower of Jesus Christ if there weren't good reasons, if there weren't evidences for me to believe that Jesus is who he said he was, that he is the light of the world, that he is God come in the flesh. I have lots of reasons why I believe that Jesus Christ died on a cross to pay for my sins and the sins of the world. I've got lots of reasons why I believe that Jesus Christ literally rose from the dead, that he's alive today, and that anyone who calls out to him will get his attention and he will hear our prayers. But rather than go through all the reasons and evidences this Christmas Eve why it makes sense to put your faith in Jesus, I just want to say this to you in closing. I've been a follower of Jesus for 45 years now. And I would not be a follower of Jesus if his claims were not testable in our own personal lives. You know, Jesus made a lot of promises to people. He did. He said, if I come into your life, I will give you hope. He said, if I come into your life, I will give you peace. He said, if I come into your life, I will give you forgiveness. He said, if I come into your life, I will free you from being afraid of dying. As I said, I've been a follower of Jesus for 45 years, and I've tested Jesus' claims in my own life. And through him, I have found hope. I have found forgiveness. I found peace. I'm not afraid of dying. But I've not only seen the claims of Jesus tested in my life, I've seen the claims of Jesus tested in thousands and thousands and thousands of people's lives. As a pastor, I've been a pastor here for 33 years. And as a pastor, I have visited hospitals where I talk with folks who had stage 4 cancer and were dying. I've sat down with people who were broken as they were going through a divorce. I've talked with folks who were in the grips of a drug addiction and people whose lives were torn up because they were afraid they had a child who had a drug addiction or some other kind of addiction. I've talked with folks whose hearts were broken because they were betrayed by somebody they trusted. I've talked with individuals who are facing bankruptcy. I've talked with people who are facing lawsuits. I've talked with lots of people who were successful but who felt empty, and they said there's got to be something more than stuff. I've got all the stuff and it's still not satisfying me. And then you talk with those people 6 months later, or you talk with those people a year later, and they've changed. They have hope. They have peace. They feel clean inside. They're no longer afraid of dying. And you ask them, what happened to you? What happened to you? And they'll say, well, and they'll use different words to describe it. They'll say, well, I became a Christian. I was born again. I finally decided to surrender my life to Jesus. I asked Jesus to come live inside of me. Whatever words they're using, they're saying, I decided to take Jesus up on his promises. I've tested the claims of Jesus in my life, and they worked. I would not be a Christian if the claims of Jesus didn't work, but they do work. And they will work in your life this Christmas Eve. If you take Jesus up on his promises, he will go to work on your behalf. And so this Christmas Eve, I want to ask you, every one of you, as children, you might be a child here. You might be a teenager here. You might be a young adult or an older adult. It doesn't matter. I'm not just saying, are you a churchgoer or not? Some of you may be coming to Vineyard for years. Others of you, this may be your first evening here. Or you may belong to no church or some church. But I'm asking you this Christmas Eve, whoever is listening to me right now, to take a step of faith. Not to take a leap in the dark, but to take a step toward the light of the one who called himself the light of the world and who promises that if he comes into our lives, he'll drive out every bit of darkness and he'll fill our lives with light and hope.